You're tuned into Soul Connection, hosted by Zenobia Todd, ASYEP intern, and Sarah Fedishin of the Aspen Hope Center. You have probably heard the term, we are all connected. Humans are social species that are wired to connect. Love and belonging are our greatest needs. Our goal is to facilitate meaningful conversations on what we all need to find wellness.
Stay tuned to listen to experts in the mental health field talk about the changing landscape of mental health and what remains true to basic human needs. We will also spend time sharing stories, experiences, and ideas we have learned along the way.
Please join us and enjoy some connection time.
Soul Connection is sponsored by the Aspen Hope Center. The Aspen Hope Center provides an array of mental health services such as crisis intervention, suicide prevention, mobile crisis response, therapy, a confidential 24/7 hope line, and a robust school-based program. To learn more about the Aspen Hope Center, you can go to aspenhopecenter.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Soul Connection. I'm Zenobia, here with
Sarah.
And
we are here today with Sonia Lindman. Sonia, we are so excited that you are here and joining us for our show today.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to be talking about something a little more heavy than Zenobia and I usually talk about. And we just want to honor that we've lost another young person in our community to suicide. And we just realize there's a lot of unrest in the world. And we brought Sonia on to help us kind of dive in, talk about what's going on, and try to find some hope and, you know, what we can do to build resilience during these tough times. But first, I think we should start with introducing Sonia and her fabulous background. All right. So Sonia Lindman has worked as a youth and family advocate in the Roaring Fork Valley for over 30 years. She's committed to the power and healing found in our personal stories and uses her teaching, counseling, and leadership skills to integrate mental health and wellness into our lives, our families, our schools, our workforce, and our community. Most importantly, Sonia truly loves humanity. Well, you do. And has spent her life in public service. Her web of experience includes serving on numerous task force, nonprofit boards, and in volunteer positions, as well as serving in political office while working in day-to-day response with our most vulnerable youth and families.
Sonia recently transitioned to a slower pace after working for years as an intervention and Colorado addiction specialist in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. She continues to train for the Aspen Hope Center, and in her quiet time, she hangs out by the creek with her dogs and family, tending to Seventh Elder, a gathering place to serve the servants, and where she continues to listen, research, and write. Her current focus is on studying and sharing topics, texts, and teachers who provide wisdom, hope, and calm in our rapidly changing world.
Wow, Sonia, we're so excited to have you. So to go back to why we are all gathering today, and really it's around the loss of another young person in our community. Sonia, why are these things important to talk about and debrief on?
Well, when I spend time with young people and families, they feel very hopeless. And part of what is happening is that the stories that are being shared end on a really difficult note. And I think one of the most important things we can do is honor those stories, but end on a very hopeful note. As we look forward, the way we see the world is determined by how we have experienced the world. It is determined by the people around us. It's determined by our beliefs and our values. And those kind of stories start to shape and form how we interact with other people. We know that regulation, and we know that co-regulation, and we know that relationships are the very things that create safety and hope in our communities, and we need to bring the conversation to that place.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's so important. I think it's so important we have you today to talk about this with us, because I feel like it's Sarah and I always talking about something, and I think it's really important that you're here.
Thank you.
So kind of going off of that, can you expand on, like, the most common mental health struggles you notice and pick up on in our community. And this can be, you know, with teens, with adults, with youth, with whoever.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. I always, when I was working in the schools and spending a lot more time in front of a whiteboard, I would draw these elaborate flow charts and triangles and try to make connections between what we were seeing and how it was resulting in the challenges we were facing. And what we know is that mental health has a seed, right? Like all of us are a combination of our body's strength and our mindful approach to life and our psychological interactions. So the biopsychosocial model of really being well means that we tend to all of those pieces. And we don't do that very well. So when you look at the general population, we're all stressed. You look at the general population, you look at poverty, you look at food, you look at exercise, how we're sleeping, what we're doing with our day-to-day experiences, the traction we're catching, what we're expanding in our lives, what we're contracting in our lives, all those things contribute to wellness. And so as a general population, we're struggling. Then you look at the next level, which is those of us who have had events in our lives that are very challenging. And how are we teaching people to incorporate wellness to serve those events? How do you get through them? How do you integrate a different pathway, a different coping mechanism? And then at the very top of that triangle are, well, what do you do when we're at our wit's end and we're spending way too much time in crisis response and not enough time in prevention and early intervention? So we're seeing those results happening in our schools and our families and our communities and our workforce. And by the time you're, you know, moving from green to the metaphor of the yellow where you're pumping your brakes and the red where you're just like slamming your brakes on, by the time you've hit the red zone, it's a little too late. And of course, we have to attend to that. But what we really need to attend to is prevention and intervention.
Yeah, I just want to say I love that. And I feel like Sarah and I have talked about this a lot, and that's not something like we really touch on. I feel like if we interview people or just us talking, I feel like it's like always like what you're talking about, like just the red category of things, but like never talking about what we can do before that,
right,
to contribute. And that's so crucial. And so I think that's like really important to talk about, because I feel like that's just not, it's always this and it's always that, but it's never like what can we do beforehand.
Right.
To prevent this.
Right. And it's going to show up in every aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. So if we're not looking at prevention, we don't have the skills to stop. And oftentimes I'll ask people immediately, halt. Are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired, thirsty, triggered? What is going on? Let's address that piece before we even get to the place where we feel like our ears are ringing and we're starting to cry and our faces are red. And once we're in that place, we're so dysregulated, it's very difficult to pull people back. So, you know, those conversations then result in, give me the fastest way to address my fear and my anger. And for a lot of folks, that's, you know, fight, flee, freeze, fawn, fold.
Yeah.
And we've talked about those things in our schools. We've talked about them in our parenting classes. We've talked about them in our teacher education. But we still get there. And so what is pushing us to that place? And part of it is we don't stop and slow down. We don't redirect our pace. We don't redirect our relationships. We keep pushing and pushing. And at that point, it's going to result in a way any mammal would act. If we want to ease that pain, fighting aggression is depression.
Yeah.
You know, and fleeing is substance use.
Yeah.
And freezing is isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Fawning is overwork. All of those things, or I can do it, you know, all of those things contribute then to the grasping of ways to ease our pain.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Thank you, Sonia. I guess I also want to add that we just really feel for this young person's family and those that were close with him, and we just send our compassion and our love. And, you know, after saying that, How does it affect the larger community? How does it, affect those that went to school with this young man or even are just hearing, you know, the story from the newspaper?
Well, I can't speak always to a specific situation, but I think we can speak to the larger perspective of what it means. And so when we think about, for instance, the media's representation, they are going to quote our law enforcement agencies. Law enforcement agencies are going to speak like law enforcement agencies. And that has a tendency to up the fear. It has a tendency to misrepresent the soul of this kid or other kids. And, no child is a killer. No human being is going to go down that road mm-hmm. unless they feel mm-hmm. like they have no other way around. Yeah. And so when we ask people's stories or we kind of fold back into what is the story that ended up pushing us to where we are right now, we have to be very sensitive to how that impacts the other kids in our community, the siblings, the families, the educators, the social, all of these people, the neighbors, mm-hmm. all of us have a story and a perception that came from our own experiences, and it may not even be close to accurate. So one of the things I hope we do a little bit better is learn to think and slow down before we give opinions about people and situations, because we don't know anybody else's story. It is yeah. by definition impossible for me to know your story.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think that's, I've said the word important on here a lot, but I think that's so important. And using empathy, and empathy is a huge thing for me. Like, whether that was towards who we lost or the people in their family or their friends or their teachers and just everyone in the community. And just thinking deeper into it, you know, than just what we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do to take care of ourselves, whether it's in these situations or just any situation struggling with?
Well, I think as we, when we hear about events like this in our community, it does take a toll, right, on us physically and emotionally. And we do jump to assumptions of, wow, you know, is our community safe? Are we doing the next right thing? And so, you know, Sonia did talk about the importance of honoring the story of this young man. But are there other things that we can do, Sonia, to take care of ourselves? And I'll just add on to taking care of each other, because that can even be more powerful.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So whenever we're feeling threatened in our lives, that's usually the root, right? Fear is the root of our challenging behavior. And when we feel threatened, we can go 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. And so when we start talking again about prevention, it means, and this is so hard, right? Because I've worked in systems evaluation and I've worked in programming and, you know, and I've spoken about how are we going to change our school systems? We've got 8 hours a day that these guys are showing up, and how do we change our neighborhoods, and how do we change our politics? And all of those things are relevant, right? So we have to think about the larger structure and the larger perspective and the larger community that we live in, and what do we want it to look like? And so from a larger perspective, yes, we have to talk about policy and procedure and protocol. And we can, on a larger perspective, talk about laws and about expectations. We can talk about norms, community norms. How are we creating community norms that are compassionate? You know, everybody knew the Nike swoop, just do it. Everybody knows now when you go through Glenwood Springs, you see slow down in town. There are images and ways that we can start to embed compassion into our communities. And we need to do that more effectively. So that's the big picture. The small picture is the pace and the time and the the experiences that we have on every day and how we really want to live our 24 hours, because we all have the same amount of time in our day. And there are structural things that we can do. We can start every conversation and end every conversation with, "Slow down, how are you?" We can start every class in a school with what, you know, a lot of teachers call do now, but what it is a check-in. Scanning the room, seeing if people are okay, asking them if they need a drink of water, saying, "Are you all right? Do you need to go step out and call your parents?" All of those things are things that we can do in protocol. In relationship, it is about catching ourselves and stopping ourselves. Our social media behavior is out of control. That kind of stuff starts to approve of bad behavior. And when we see people in leadership or we see people online hurting each other, and that becomes a social norm, we have to get strong enough to stand up and say, "I understand and I love you and I get that you are angry, but that is not how we solve these problems." And so we need to start doing a little bit more of that. Doesn't take much. Yeah. To start that plan.
You just touched on so many things that matter a lot to me. And I think that, like, it all starts with compassion. Like, and I could talk about schools for so long, and I know that's such a bad thing to say, but, like, school's great. Like, I have a great education, and I have great teachers, but I think that it's so rushed, and so, like, 8 hours a day is, like, so much for so many people, and, like, even me today, like, I was having an off day and, like, no one noticed. And I'm not asking for people to notice, and that's not what I mean. But it's just, like, I feel like even I want to hear about people having amazing days, too. And so, like, I feel like stopping and slowing down, like, whether that is a teacher or administrator or if it's another student. And, like, it's just that, like, matters a lot. And matters a lot to me. And so, like, I try to check in with people, and, like, my friends check in with me, and, like, it means a lot, but I wish more people could do that. So I totally agree with you on that. Yeah, I think, like, what I said before, like, it all starts with compassion and empathy, in my opinion, and just thinking about how other people feel and how that would make you feel. I always think about that. And I know that's so, like, kindergarten of me to say, but, like, it's so true. And I don't know. That's very, very crucial parts of everyday life that people really need to improve on, in my opinion.
It's true. And the compassion isn't kindergarten. Yeah. Like, that is what brings people to humanity. And I think about some of my greatest teachers in my life. And we are pushed into situations sometimes where we have to learn our lessons, you know? And I'm no different. And so as I read all of these texts and I reach out to all these teachers and I gather as much information as I can, then the weather comes in. Or you're right, then I didn't eat well or I couldn't sleep last night or, you know, all of these things can these variables impact us. And that's called, in my world, I call that the total load. And the total load can be, you know, you imagine somebody carrying all of these books down the hallway and somebody puts one more in their hands and they just collapse. Mm-hmm. And it can take one person saying, "Hey, let me help you with that."
Yeah, exactly.
Or it can take you stopping yourself and saying, "I can't carry anymore." Mm-hmm. Or it might be, "You know, I was okay yesterday, but today I need to take some time." Yeah. And we've created a world of achievement and a world of pace and competition. And that is the way we built our school systems and our economic systems. And we can step back from that and we can say we can come about this whole plan differently. And I do believe that there are very wise teachings that are rooted in many, many spiritual organizations, spiritual doctrines, spiritual writings, spiritual teachings, relationships, but we use them for our benefit instead of we use them with an agenda. And that's unfortunate because what those teachings can be for us is a community building effort. It can be about caring for each other. It can be about putting the earth first. It can be about stopping and paying attention to our elders. It can be about honoring children. All of those things are taught in every world culture. And so we misuse it. We misuse information. We misuse guidance. We misuse what we consider achievement. And what the greatest achievement is to live a life well lived and then to care about other people.
Yeah. No, that's honestly, like, I really needed to hear that because school is so much for me right now and life is a lot for me right now. And I feel like exactly what you were just saying, like, achievement is, like, kind of misunderstood and everywhere, you know? And so, like, and I feel like school systems are just like college, sports, like grades. And I feel like a lot of times, like, that just defines who I am, and it's totally not. And that is not the life I want to live, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's not what I want to spend my time thinking about. And like, this is what I love to do. And like, this is my source of achievement, like talking to people and meeting new people and community and conversation and all that stuff. Like, that's my sense of it and my source of it. And so I don't know, I just think I totally agree with everything.
Yeah. Purpose and indicators are kind of a fascinating thing to think about. When we were looking at what defined wellness, what defines achievement, what defines a good life, people were looking at indicators that weren't accurate.
Yeah.
And we weren't looking at the correct indicators for mental wellness and for physical wellness. I remember sitting in a really important meeting one time, and someone was saying, okay, well, their attendance is great. Their grades are really great. They've got this going on. They've got all this privilege. And why are we missing them? Why? And because we were looking at the wrong indicators. Again, you know, what is it that defines purpose and value in a person's sacred life? Everybody carries that. And so when we're aware of our own stories and that which defines our coping and that which defines who we are and what we believe in, we need to take the time to really examine that and reflect on it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sonia. I was actually having a conversation with a friend of mine and about the event that happened at the Caverns. And she talked about that somebody must have cared about this young man because at the end he decided not to harm others and identified that he wasn't a killer. And what her perspective was is somebody must have invested some time and energy that he was able to reflect and know that about himself. And I was really grateful to hear that because I think I was a little bit fearful when I first heard about it. Of like, wow, that's really close to home, and a lot of people could have been very hurt. And then talking with this person, she really brought in a part of like, wow, it is about relationships. It is about connecting with someone. And I know you and I've been in the field for a long time, and we talk about planting seeds, that sometimes we feel like we're trying to help or support someone and it's not clicking, and you know, it can be frustrating or hard, but knowing that maybe your kindness or the time you took can really affect someone and be really meaningful. So I was just curious what your thought was on that perspective.
We have been in the field a long time. and actually, that is really important because I do run into people that young people that I was working with decades ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And one of the things that they often say to me is, I just didn't know. I didn't know things were going to get better. I didn't know. I didn't have the skills to breathe. I didn't know how to regulate. I didn't know that the perspective could be different, that I could live in a different country. I could live in a different community. I would have different people in my life. I would have more control over my life. I would have less control over my life. So, you know, as those conversations really expand, you're right. People start to say, I didn't know. And And we do plant seeds, and those do grow into, and they flourish. And oftentimes, it can be the smallest thing, you know. And we know in our research that kids will speak to a moment that nobody caught, where somebody said, "You got this. You're okay." And we do so much around accountability and holding people in certain places, and we don't speak enough to holding ourselves in a way that is compassionate and kind. And accountability isn't about checklists, and it's not about making sure that you're showing up and doing what you need to do. It's about being able to say at the very end of the day, I can look back and these moments really impacted somebody's story, and they impacted my story. And so when we start to reflect on those kind of thoughts, hope is abundant. Mm-hmm. It is abundant. And we have no idea when things are going to shift and how things are going to change in our lives. So the more we give anybody an opportunity to look at the positive, and I'm not talking toxic positivity because that's nauseating, right? Like nobody needs that in their lives. But really to say you can have faith that things are going to fold open for you in a way that is going to be concentric. Like you're going to have all these circles of people who will come into your life that you don't even know yet, and all of these experiences that will teach you something new and you don't even know them yet. Mm-hmm. And all of those things are about creating hope and purpose and positivity in people's lives. Yeah. And that's what we don't see when people check out. Isolation is painful. You can start to throw questions towards yourself, and you start to imagine that nobody likes you and that you're all alone, and you can immerse yourself in violence and games and movies and people who are texting you that are hurtful. And that's not truth. Mm-hmm. What's truth is the sacred heart that you hold inside of you, and that people can see and send it back to you and say, no, you are okay. Mm-hmm. And you will be even more okay. And that is a feeling. It is not just words. It's like a feeling. That is heart connection.
Yeah.
And that's what we all need to be doing every single day.
Yeah. And soul connection.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today. I feel like you were one of the most important people to have on here, and I loved the conversation we had, and hard conversations are so important, so I'm really glad. Thank you so much again for coming on.
Yes, thank you, Sonia. What a fantastic conversation, and you gave us a lot to think about.
Thank you for having me, and I just adore both of you very much. Be well.